Today's Breezy Breakfast examines Guelph's approach to multi-year budgeting. The city of Guelph has a $500 million budget. How is revenue raised? How is it used? What is the relationship between property taxes, federal and provincial funding, and fees collected from builders and developers working in Guelph? We learn the advantages of multi-year budgeting and its relationship to the city's strategic plan. The strategic plan is Guelph's blueprint for city building. Our guests this week outlined everything from spending on large capital projects to funding infrastructure and how we pay for transit. Our guests are Shana Adwair, Strategic Finance Leader, Stephanie DeVust, Senior Corporate Analyst Budget Strategy, and Trevor Lee, Deputy Chief and Administrative Officer of Corporate Services. And remember, next week we meet in person at Rise and Shine Restaurant on McDonald Street and share our reading picks for the holidays.
Good morning, everyone. And if there is one lesson in life that I have learned, it is to never mess with a professional librarian. When they tell you to get organized, they mean it. So thank you very much, Tanya. Before we begin today's Breezy Breakfast, I would like to do a very quick statement of territorial acknowledgement that comes from the city of Guelph. As we gather, we are reminded that Guelph is situated on treaty land that is steeped in rich Indigenous history and home to many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people today. As a city, we have a responsibility for the stewardship of the land on which we live and work. Today, we acknowledge the Mississauga of the Credit First Nation of the Anishinaabeg peoples on whose traditional territory we are meeting, and for the land for which we give thanks. I would like to also welcome Shana Adwair and Stephanie DeVoe here from the city of Guelph. I believe Trevor Lee was going to be here, but perhaps he's not here yet. Just very briefly, Shana is the strategic finance leader for the city of Guelph, while Stephanie is the senior corporate analyst. Last night, they were part of giving us a very thorough explanation of the budget this year and were prepared to answer and answer quite well questions about multi-year budgeting and about different aspects of the budget and what we could expect. Shana and Stephanie, I'd like to welcome you to the Breezy Breakfast audience, who I will suggest will likely ask some very good questions today about the multi-year budget and about different aspects of it, likely significantly different from last night. I will remind people that I will likely ask a couple of questions on Bill 23 if they don't arise, because Bill 23 is a challenge to us all today. We are in some senses in a period of uncertainty with our financial assumptions, which makes multi-year budgeting and any kind of budgeting even the more challenging. And before I hand it over, I'd just like to welcome Trevor Lee, who has just shown up as well. Trevor is the CAO responsible for finance at the City of Guelph, and we look forward to hearing from him as well. So with that, I will pass it over to you, and I have a feeling it is Stephanie who's beginning, but I'm not certain. Is that correct?
Actually, it's Trevor who's going to kick us off today.
Darn, I had three chances.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having us at your Breezy Breakfast. I remember days when we would gather in actually a restaurant and we would be able to get up in front of a corner of the restaurant and have a chat about things and activities. So I hope to return to one of those opportunities soon. So as mentioned by Councillor Ault, I'm certainly pleased to be here along with Shana and with Stephanie and also with Tara. And each of us will have moments to speak with you. But it's my start off with this to just give you a bit of an overview of what happened last evening during our council workshop on the budget. And we met with council, we walked them through as an education session for their budget 101. And we covered off the content of what was included in the previously approved and yet to be confirmed 2022 and 2023 budgets. The 2023 budget material that we presented to council is a refresh of the material previously presented and that we'll be bringing back to council on January the 12th, the release of the data for the 2023 budget update for confirmation. It will go through an engagement phase, it will go through an awareness and an educational phase, and then it'll all culminate with a presentation to council on January the 25th. The The part that we shared with council last evening is really what is the session and what isn't the session. And the session last night was not to go through, as Councillor Ault was alluding to, the impacts of what you might feel is current topics or current content. It is more so really to just give them that educational background.
Here we go. Okay, good morning, everybody. So I'll just jump into it. So my slides here are going to talk about how we build the budget. So moving right into things, the budget is aligned with the strategic plan cycle and our strategic plan's five priority areas. The current plan covers 4 years from 2019 to 2023. These priorities guide the budget, setting us on a sustainable path for our economy, environment, transportation, while supporting an efficient workforce and united community. Our goal is to ensure Guelph is future ready. Having a strategy is extremely important, but it needs to work hand in hand with the financial plan to provide the resources to implement it. The city's budget outlines its resource needs to deliver programs and services to the community today and into the future. The budget sets the pace of how quickly we can make progress towards council's strategic priorities. Aligning the budget with the strategic planning process demonstrates excellence in fiscal management and also reinforces the budget that the budget reflects decisions made by council. As described in the video, or I know you didn't see the video, but we have two parts of our operating or of our budget, operating and capital, and they're connected. The operating budget provides the funding for staff and other materials and services that are needed to deliver the services community relies upon. So for example, take Guelph Transit. The operating budget includes the salary budget for the bus drivers. It includes fuel and maintenance costs for the buses. The capital budget is where we would tackle the one-time infrastructure and large projects. Typically at the end of a project, there is a new asset created or a betterment to an existing asset. Again, using Guelph Transit as an example, we need to replace the city bus fleet after approximately 10 years so they don't break down while we're transporting people. Capital budgets can range in significance from a new facility right down to the replacement of a lawnmower. The operating and capital budgets are connected through transfers to capital reserve funds. These transfers are based on five funding strategies that we'll talk about later on. These capital reserve transfers provide most of the funding for the projects in the capital budget, but there are additional sources of revenue for capital projects that we'll also discuss later. The capital budget can also have impacts on the operating budget, as new capital assets need to be maintained and potentially staffed depending on the type of asset that we're building. We call this operating impacts from capital. An example of this would be the staffing and maintenance costs for a newly built facility. All municipalities in Ontario are legally required to have a balanced budget. At the basic level, we take city expenses, add in the net expenses for local boards and shared services, and then deduct user fees, grants, licenses, permits, investment income, things like that. And that leaves us with the amount that is required to be raised through payments in lieu and property taxes to be levied. The city funds all or part of its operations of several local boards and shared services that have separate governance structures and varied types of relationships with the city. These are the Guelph Public Library Board, the Guelph Police Board, Guelph Wellington Dufferin Public Health, the County of Wellington, the Elliott Community, Downtown Guelph Business Association, and the Grand River Conservation Authority. With the exception of the DGBA, the Downtown Guelph Business Association, and the Grand River Conservation Authority, the city's share is funded through property taxes. Unlike city departments, there's additional legislation governing the local boards and shared service budget, which limits council's ability to directly change items within the budget presented. A special levy is added to the tax bill of the downtown Guelph businesses to fund the DGBA. So I think I'm handing the floor over to Shanna now for the next part of the presentation.
So the operating budget consists of seven categories of expenses. Purchase services include things like repairs and maintenance costs, insurance, consulting and contracted services, Purchased goods include things like fleet, equipment, operating supplies, and utilities. Transfers include amounts transferred to the County of Wellington for providing social services, public health, the Elliott community, and other community grants. Financial expenses include write-offs from taxation reassessments and bank charges. And there are two categories of reserve transfers. Operating reserve transfers include transfers to reserves to fund program-specific or strategic items, such as affordable housing, election costs, or redevelopment incentives. And capital reserve transfers make up the second largest portion of the operating budget. As we mentioned earlier, and we'll delve into more later, these transfers are based on five funding strategies. Included in this category is also debt, principal, and interest. The most significant category of operating costs is compensation, which makes up almost half of the operating budget and funds the cost of staff that deliver services to the community. The city builds its budget using consistent assumptions across all services, and the most significant of these are compensation factors aligned with collective bargaining agreements, inflation on multi-year contracts, and price escalation on commodities like gas, electricity, and chemicals. Departments are continuously trying to do more with each dollar to make their operations more efficient, automate manual processes, and eliminate paper-based transactions to improve customer service. You can read about the efficiencies created in the strategy document that's posted at guelph.ca/budget called Designing and Delivering Better City Services. The Continuous Improvement Office also launched in 2020 and is supporting a culture shift within the organization towards a goal where every employee thinks about every task they do, questions why, and how it could add more value to the customer. Approximately 56% of the city's revenue is from property taxes and payments in lieu of taxes, followed by user fees, rates, and charges at 22%. From a revenue perspective, historically, we've aimed to increase all fees by 2% or equivalent to the underlying increase in costs. User fees, by definition, are cost recovery tools to help reduce costs placed on the property taxpayers for services with an individual or combined individual and public benefit. A number of user fee and fare reviews are underway in 2023, which will inform the 2024 multi-year budget, especially for services impacted by higher than normal levels of inflation. From a property tax perspective, we've continued to assume 1% assessment growth, which the city has exceeded this year. There'll be more on that to come as part of the budget update presented in January. Capital grants and subsidies, development charges, and other include grants received from the federal and provincial governments, development charges, and parkland dedication revenue. This is the category of revenue with the most vulnerability from recent legislation changes. Operating grants include provincial funding for paramedic services and federal funding for smart cities and COIL. And licenses, permits, investment income, and recoveries include funding from the county for paramedic services, business licenses, marriage licenses, and investment income. When we think about service delivery and how to reflect increasing impacts, we categorize all impacts into these three buckets on the screen. While this primarily started as capital budget strategies, we are maturing this classification into the whole budget, leading to more constructive prioritization and decision-making conversations. It enables a platform to talk about fiscal impacts in common principles rather than having to choose investment in one service over another. These principles are infrastructure renewal, which provides the same service standard or level of service to the current population. And examples include replacing roads and vehicles to maintain a state of good repair, inflation impacts, efficiency gains, and legislative changes. Growth maintains standards to a growing population. This allows us to keep pace as the city grows. Examples including adding a new ambulance to a growing part of the city, which also comes with people, facility, fuel, and maintenance costs, or the expansion of water and wastewater pipes underground to accept the capacity of more people living and working in the same geographic space. City building provides new services or service enhancement to current or future populations. Examples here would include increasing transit frequency or expanding the active transportation and trail network throughout the city. From those three foundational service impact categories, we have five funding strategies that we use to fund capital projects. These long-term funding strategies show up in the operating budget through transfers to capital reserve funds that we mentioned earlier. Many times, a capital project has a combination of funding strategies. As a basic example, think about replacing an existing road, but also adding expanded lanes for transit priority and protected cycling. This project is then a combination of infrastructure renewal, replacing the old road, growth, accommodating more population and service enhancement, increasing available kilometers of protected cycling infrastructure. We do this because the funding sources for each of these pieces is unique and enables more transparent conversation about why the project is occurring. These are long-term strategies, and a minor change in any one year will not normally impact the ability to execute that year's capital budget. But it's important to remember that the 25-year capital plan is impacted at a rate of 25 times whatever the change is, based on the assumption that a cut today is a permanent loss of funding for that strategy in every year of the plan. So now we'll go over to the bathtub. So this graphic is really meant to bring together the whole picture with respect to how the capital budget is funded. The faucet represents the annual operating budget. The rate of flow of the water is the funding from the faucet is determined by the financial strategies discussed on the previous slide. The annual capital transfers from the operating budget determines how full the bathtub is. And the bathtub represents our capital reserve funds. Annually, money is taken out of the reserve funds, or the bathtub, on the right side through those purple buckets, through the big purple bucket, I guess, to fund the capital projects approved for that year. The purple bucket represents the capital budget as a whole, and the three smaller buckets represent the three major categories of capital projects in relative proportion: infrastructure renewal, growth, and city building. The important thing to understand is the amount flowing into the tub is not dependent on the size of the current year's needs. Instead, it takes a long-term perspective and provides sufficient funds to cover long-term capital needs over 25 years. The capital budget can fluctuate substantially from one year to another, but through reserves, we smooth out the contributions to the bathtub and therefore create stability in the tax levy and user rates. We can also use debt to support a short-term dip in the tub. And so I think we had planned to play a video. Is that going to work? Okay. So we're going to try the next video about asset management planning. And if it doesn't work, we're just going to roll with that and we're going to send you out the link. So just give us 1 second and we'll give it a try, please.
The city of in providing and maintaining the many services Guelph residents depend on every day, like transportation, clean drinking water, recreation, garbage collection, and recycling. The city has approximately $4.4 billion in municipal infrastructure assets that are critical to delivering these services. These include roads, bridges, sewer and water systems, recreation facilities, and parks. Guelph is similar to many municipalities. We are facing challenges because of our aging infrastructure. Many of our assets are reaching the end of their life cycle, and there's a need for new infrastructure to service growth. This is where asset management planning comes in. Asset management planning is the process used to help make the best possible decisions regarding the building, operating, maintaining, renewing, replacing, and disposing of infrastructure assets. Simply put, it's all about making the right decision at the right time for the right amount. The city focuses on four fundamental goals. 1, providing levels of service that meet expectations and ensure a high quality of life for the community. 2, demonstrating sustainable, full life cycle planning. 3, ensuring accountability, transparency, and engagement. And 4, managing risks to service delivery. We take a proactive approach and initially developed a corporate asset management plan in 2017. In 2020, the city developed a new policy and updated its plan to meet the new provincial regulation requirements. In 2021, the city developed a detailed core asset management plan, which included roads and related assets, bridges, water, wastewater, and stormwater management. These core assets comprise more than 80% of the total asset base. Future updates to the asset management plan will include all remaining city assets. The planning and policy development process provides a clear, detailed picture of our assets, needs, and priorities, which plays an important role in the development of Guelph's multi-year budget. Based on asset management principles, a target amount of funding is required to manage current and future asset risks. The difference between the target amount and available budget is what we call the infrastructure gap. If the infrastructure gap increases, it will result in assets that will be inaccessible before their end of life or assets that are not in optimal condition and in need of repair. So, we need to balance growth, catch up on overdue maintenance of existing assets, finance the replacement of old assets, and modernize our infrastructure to be better prepared for tomorrow's challenges, while striving to keep property taxes, water, wastewater, and stormwater rates reasonable for residents. The city's corporate-wide asset management plan is how we prioritize our infrastructure needs to achieve the greatest benefit to our community and to ensure Guelph is a great place to live now and well into the future. For more information on the City of Guelph's asset management plan, visit guelph.ca/plans-and-strategies/asset-management-program.
So now that we've gone over how the city budget is built, we want to focus on how our city's multi-year budget process works. So the multi-year budgeting is an emerging municipal best practice, and Guelph is an early adopter along with the cities of Waterloo and London. The multi-year budget process was introduced to council in 2021, and the first multi-year budget was approved for 2022 and 2023 in December of 2021. Although a four-year budget model is preferred, our city's first multi-year budget was created as a two-year budget to align with the current strategic plan that expires in 2023. The strategic plan will be refreshed for 2024 through 2027, and this is where our new council will have the opportunity to impact the city's vision and identify the strategies that they will collectively deliver over their council term. As you've heard so far throughout this presentation, the budget is the gas pedal or affordability tool that dictates the pace in implementing the strategic plan initiatives. This is why the next multi-year budget cycle will cover a four-year period that aligns with the strategic plan refresh. Now, let's turn our attention to the next video about our city's multi-year budget process. I understand that it may just be an audio, but as Shanna mentioned, we will send the links to the visuals following this meeting.
I'd like to help you understand your city's multi-year budget. Before we get started, it's important to know what a budget is. Simply put, it's a planned, itemized summary of money that's coming into the city and how that money is spent for a specific period of time. The city has a multi-year budget which covers a four-year period of time that's linked to council's strategic plan. What does that mean? When a new council is elected for a four-year term, one of the first orders of business is to develop a strategic plan. This plan identifies council's vision, mission, values, and strategic areas of focus for their term in office. Most importantly, it identifies the specific strategies the council will fund and deliver over their term. It's through the multi-year budget that the strategic plan is put into action. Linking City Council's strategic plan to the multi-year budget provides accountability between funding requirements, timing, and cost to City of Guelph residents. It better aligns longer-term goals and objectives with longer-term funding plans, providing greater certainty to residents about the future direction of their taxes. An important element of the multi-year budget is the annual confirmation process. It's required under the Municipal Act. Council must review, update, and confirm the budget for that year and following years that the budget applies to ensure that the City of Guelph has sufficient funds to maintain operations and implement its capital program. And annual updates provide Council the opportunity to amend the budget to provide flexibility for special circumstances that require funding and resource adjustments. This can be done by one of three types of budget amendments. 1. New or changed legislation or regulation. 2. New or changed Council direction. And 3. Economic or political conditions. Now, let's recap. 1. Guelph has a multi-year budget which covers 4 years and is linked to Council's strategic plan. 2. The strategic plan identifies what Council is going to achieve during their term. 3. The multi-year budget puts it all into action as it provides accountability, aligns longer-term goals and funding plans, all while providing greater certainty to taxpayers. 4. The multi-year budget is reviewed, updated, and confirmed annually. This provides council the opportunity to make changes for special circumstances that require funding and resource adjustments. 5. This can be done by one of three types of budget amendments. 1. New or changed legislation or regulation. 2. New or changed council direction. And 3. Economic or political conditions. And that's your city's multi-year budget.
So as described in the video, the City of Guelph's multi-year budget cycle is not a set it and forget it approach to budgeting. The Municipal Act requires that if a municipality passes a multi-year budget, it must readopt it in every second or subsequent year, either in the year that the budget applies or in the preceding year. The budget confirmation process, which includes three steps, reviewing, updating, and finally confirming the budget, is the mechanism for readoption in the city's budget policy. For council, the first step in the review phase started last night through the review of the 2023 approved budget. The update portion of the process will begin for council on January 12th with the release of the 2023 updated budget website, and budget confirmation is scheduled for January 25th. Next, we will review the 2023 budget that was approved by council last year. So this chart shows the increase in the net operating investment plus the increase in transfers to capital reserve funds offset by assessment growth for the increase in net taxes and payments in lieu to be levied. The increase is shown as a breakdown between the city and the local boards and shared services. You will notice the second line in this chart referencing assessment growth, resulting in a decrease to the net investment. But what is assessment growth? Assessment growth is the sum of all the changes that happen to our city's tax base during a year, including new construction, major renovations, demolitions, and property value appeals. Assessment growth revenue is the year-over-year change in property tax revenue from assessment growth in Guelph. Assessment growth revenue can be negative if the changes to our tax base net out to a negative value. Property assessment is done by the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation, or MPAC. It's important to note that assessment changes do not immediately result in more income to the city. New or changing home values in our community may redistribute how much each homeowner must pay, but no new money is collected. Last year, council approved a 5.17% increase to the total amount to be raised from taxation and payment in lieu of taxes, and a 2.73% utility rate increase, which is a correction. Now let's take a look at the drivers behind these changes. Each year, we look at the drivers that impact the budget. Annually, the main themes that impact the budget will be brought to council through the budget approval or budget confirmation process. Five or overriding themes emerged during the creation of the 2022-2023 multi-year budget. They are pacing capacity, COVID-19, changing legislation, modernizing and transforming service delivery, and energy and climate change. Since the budget's creation, the COVID-19 theme has evolved from local response and recovery to larger global pressures that are also being felt right here in Guelph. Rapid inflation and supply chain challenges. Supply chain issues are being felt not only from a materials perspective, but also in terms of labor shortages across many of our departments. We're also experiencing severe and critical impacts to our healthcare system that are impacting community safety and well-being. On January 25th, we will be providing you with staff's updated analysis of the current circumstances that drive the key themes that will guide our recommended budget update for confirmation. So what is in the 2023 approved operating budget? We have a number of investments, including an investment in digital and customer service. Paramedics Master Plan. So the Paramedics Master Plan proposes enhancing resources in 2022 through 2025 to mitigate the pressures of increasing response volumes while better meeting the needs of patients and area residents. City staff continue to take all measures possible to ensure that resources are being used as efficiently and effectively as possible to reduce response time and provide excellent service with additional resources as required. Operating expansions and paramedic services are cost shared between the city and county in year one, and funding is shared by the province, city, and county in year two and beyond. We have investments in community benefit agreement expansion and transit route review. So this investment aligns with the transportation master plan's values of being safe, equitable, complete, sustainable, affordable, and supportive of land use through creating more connected route networks with increased service frequency. Investment support the proposed transit priority measures in the Transportation Master Plan to achieve quality transit network. We have got some emerging transportation technology investments and maintaining service level to a growing community and our capital program resourcing, which was presented to council to address the growing issue by investing in necessary human resources to enable the delivery of expanded capital programs. These resources will provide additional direct project management capacity, as well as internal support and accounts payable, communications, and project design functions. And finally, the Baker Street and South End Community Center phase-in. There's a misalignment with the timing of pressures related to growth as the city phases in the impacts of Baker District and South End Community Center for 2023 through 2025. This continues to be an area of developing maturity in financial planning, with improved methods of tracing and aligning the growth revenues and expenses. So this is a breakdown of the approved 2023 capital budget by category. As you can see, the approved 2023 capital budget was $161.9 million, and the majority of capital projects in the plan are in the infrastructure renewal category. As we mentioned earlier, a capital prioritization process was undertaken over the past summer and fall that will change the overall 2023 capital budget presented to council for confirmation. And then key themes in the 2023 capital budget are keeping our assets in a good state of, in a state of good repair, investments in transit and active transportation, water and wastewater treatment, improving customer service through technology, and lessening our environmental impact. And that concludes our presentation for this morning. And at this point, I would like to welcome any questions that you may have.
Thanks to all of you for that great presentation. And the nice thing about Breezy Breakfast on video is that we're actually not on video. So those, just to assure you, those videos will go over very well over the radio and the podcast. They were very clearly presented and easily understood. So I think that despite the technical glitches, there's another avenue for communicating to people as well. Tanya, before I go to some of the questions that I have, I believe you have a couple of questions, and I saw a couple of great questions from Ron East and from Warren as well in the chat that I think perhaps we should get to first. So Tanya, over to you.
Okay, so there are three questions that were asked in advance by John. The city is committed to acquiring properties in the river corridors to fulfill the vision of the vital role they play in the life of the city. The city has to be nimble to respond to these opportunities. How does that fit with the multi-year budgeting and approval process?
Thanks for the question. So I'm going to take a first try here. And I would say that the multi-year budget actually does support the flexibility that's part of one of the main benefits of it. Our reserve fund structure enables us to, like, if there's the items mid-year that council would like to consider, like land acquisition, we have those reserve funds available, and then staff can take recommendations to council in that way at any time. And so the other thing it does is it allows us to look at the capital program over we go 10 years, but and then that kind of that plan rolls each year, we'll update it and move forward. And that gives the community the ability to see the expected timing of those projects.
Okay, so how much money is currently set aside for planned parkland and in particular Wellington Park?
So, I don't have specifics on the parkland side in terms of how much is planned to be acquired. I believe the Parks and Rec Master Plan is coming back to council in 2023 that we'll have a lot more information on the plan and what parkland and where in the city. So that's to come this year. In terms of the reserve funds, again, I don't know, I don't have the exact numbers, but I believe that the parkland dedication reserve fund is sitting in the 10 million to maybe to $15 million range at this point. And that funding is fully dedicated to acquiring parkland in the city.
Okay, so yeah, I'm just with regards to those reserve funds, I believe that the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing is going to conduct an audit on certain municipalities with regards to reserve funds in general. Is Guelph one of them? And well, yes, that's my question. Is Guelph one of those municipalities? Do you know that yet?
At this point, we have not been notified. Okay. We've just seen that same letter that has been out in the public. So, yeah.
Okay.
I want to follow up on that before we leave it, because I think the parkland is a perennial concern for people. And I think your point about that audit is very important. I was wondering, Tara or Trevor, if you could please explain why those reserves, why that parkland dedication and other reserves matter. I'm having some difficulty with what Ontario home builders are suggesting about communities sitting on pots of money, because it strikes me that these quote pots of money fit very nicely into multi-year budgeting.
So I'll take a stab at an answer for that, Councillor Ault. So I think a point of correction, and I'm not going to weigh in into the political side of this other than just go to the straight to the facts. Yeah. The facts are the importance. They're the ones that drive decisions for us. The reserve and reserve funds are transparently detailed for council and the public on our presentations on all of the allocations, the perceptions that that there are groupings of financial assets that are unallocated or are uncommitted to future developments in any of the areas. We're talking right now about parks. We could be talking about city infrastructure. We could be talking about any aspect of city operations that are not inside of an operating budget that are captured in, you know, to make some light of it, the bathtub, and how we are funding those particular projects in the longer term. So to the extent that perception could be drawn that there are unallocated funds sitting in reserve that are not spoken for and that are simply hidden or tucked away is an inaccurate statement. All of our reserve funds have particular funded targets, funded values to meet the needs of the city, both currently and beyond.
Thank you. Very clearly stated. Tanya, over to you again.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. I appreciate that, because these proposals of audits suggest that, yes, money is just lying around doing nothing. The last question in advance is as follows. How does the city bring the Guelph Junction Railway into the multi-year budgeting process, given its inextricable link to the city capital and operating budgets, and the need for more transparency in its operations?
So I can take a stab at that. And as for reference, not only in the role of a deputy CEO for corporate services, I also am the chief financial officer of Guelph Junction Railway. And our CEO is Mr. Scott Stewart, our CAO for the city of Guelph. The Guelph Junction Railway is an asset that's been longstanding for the city of Guelph. Its primary responsibility is the economic impact that it provides to our business community. It also has safe rail transport, which has proven to reduce the amount of incidents of accidents or climate effect. It also is a cost benefit for the supply of raw materials to various industrial sections of the city. Unfortunately, there are moments in which it's transferring through and around our city causes some driving issues, and we certainly hear a good deal of that. But the city of Guelph looks to Guelph Junction Railway more than just simply the dollars and cents economic drivers. And the question raised is probably part of an ongoing conversation that we're having.
So yes, we are experiencing some technical difficulties. Trevor, I think you're frozen.
He's frozen. Yep. This is the theme of the morning for us here, technical difficulties.
Yeah. Cost cutting at City Hall, freeze on our staff.
Well, there was a full moon. Well, there is a full moon. So, we could just blame it on that.
There you go. First of all, thanks very much to Trevor. And maybe we could go on to some other questions. Tanya, I think you said that's the end for yours. Ron, you had a very good question that was presented in the chat. And I believe Tanya tried to answer it, but I think it's important for it to be answered verbally so that it can be heard on the podcast. So, Ron, if you wouldn't mind, if you could ask that question, that would be fabulous.
Okay, first of all, I just want to say I enjoyed the presentation of the budget, but it sounds to me as if the budget assumes that Bill 23 doesn't exist. And in fact, we're sort of carrying on that basis so that we can, manage our own our city affairs as we go along. But we can't really ignore the fact that Bill 23 disrupts this entire process. So how do we keep going through the final year of this multi-year budget and manage to ignore what in fact has already taken place, and in the end will in fact incredibly affect what it is we're actually doing now? So I'd just like to get a response. Thank you.
So it's, and I apologize for cutting out. It's technology is not our friend this morning, but I'm back. And I'll address that start of that question. Maybe my colleagues can assist me at the end. So the presentation that we've given to you, the presentation that was delivered to council last evening, is a budget 101 reflection on the 2023.
Oh, good.
I can jump in maybe on that. So it's a reflection of the budget that was approved by council last year, and staff have been working throughout the summer and fall to review and update that budget, and we will bring an updated budget to council for consideration in January. So, oh, and Trevor's back. So
I'm back to you. Everything that Shanna said. There's value in that we will be coming to you. Also mentioned, and if I'm repeating what Shanna just mentioned, the question was raised last evening, and we will be looking at the regulations once they're released, and we will be assessing the impact of those. And always is the case, we are trying to provide stability and predictability to the community, and we don't want to have, as some other municipalities are struggling with their impacts on their budget forecasting for the tax rates that they will be applying for the 2023 budget. We are also signaling to our council when we come to them with a material release on January the 12th with a stabilization strategy that is going to complete the 22-23 multi-year budget and then set a framework for them to work on their strategic planning, which will inform the 24-27 multi-year budgeting. So I know that Councillor Alda did ask me, and I'll use this opportunity to get a plug in. What are the values of multi-year budgeting? The values of multi-year budgeting provide that predictability, that ability to see the impacts of decisions made in one year as they transition into succeeding years. And there's strength in that for understanding of a community to see its municipal partner and what the rates are going to be for them to be able to predict both residentially. And also, let's not forget the business communities that are in our midst as well. If you're running a business, you would like to know what, at least with a sense of predictability, what your forecasted operating design is going to be like, and not have it subject to a gross reset that happens each and every year. So we're trying our very best to provide that stability going forward.
Thank you very much for that answer. It was stated last night that we are probably 6 months away from the regulations actually being established. So for all intents and purposes, we can proceed business as usual with some caveats for this time period, this budget period as it stands. Warren, you had a great question. I was wondering if you would mind asking it. Then I see Susan Watson has her hand up. We'll go to her after that. Warren, Morgan, did you record Warren's question?
I did. So kind of paraphrasing the question, can city staff realistically handle the 18,000 new builds by 2031 that's been dictated by the provincial government?
So thank you for that question. And I was looking to see if there was a warrant on screen as well at the same time as you're calling out, Councillor Ault. I think the challenge that that question presents is not just a Guelph challenge, it's a challenge across the entirety of the province. And that is setting the expectations of growth in the homes sector that are being identified. We have a lot of reliance on not just that which is under the control of the municipality. We have the ability to control the services that we deliver and to do our very best to work and expedite the services to the extent that we have capacity to handle. But a great deal of it relies on the remainder of the building community and the developing community to bring these actions forward. If you are following various municipalities, the statistics that are being presented is in some cases multiples of a value of permits and builds greater than any experience levels, even in pre-pandemic settings. These are really difficult challenges for us to overcome in trying to support our community. But it does take more than just us. It does take the building community to also step up to the commitments that they would like to build and to deliver. And all of that under a places to grow level of legislation, and all of that also with respect and awareness of the communities in which these builders are building and the amount of growth is foreseeable to deliver. The current projections, I believe, and I'm going to see if I can get some nods around my room here where I am, we're projected to go up to 208,000 people by 2051. And the current allotment of building permits that we're expected to be producing are upwards to, I think, 1,800 building permits per year, when we are currently experiencing, even with our greatest capacity of staff availability in the coordination with the building community, we have been seeing levels in the 800s range previously. So there is effort for us to invest in this as well, but there's also effort from the building community to work collaboratively with us.
Thanks very much. Tara, were you going to make a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, just in terms of the fiscal capacity on the city side as well, we have a lot of work to do in the next year, not just in finance, but through all the departments to reconsider the infrastructure plans, all the master plans that we've just done to meet the 208,000 target by 2051. We need to look at the fast tracking of that and what infrastructure needs to go in when, and then what the impact of that is fiscally and what that then does to our debt capacity. And so that is work that we have to undertake. And so to answer the question in terms of the fiscal capacity related to Bill 23, we can't answer that right now, but that's on the work plan this year.
Thank you very much. And we'll go to Susan Watson, and then Bill Munkle had a question as well. Susan.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Yeah, I have, a couple of comments I'd like to make. First is around water and wastewater fees or user fees. I do find that a bit of a misnomer, because we're not just paying for the water we use and the wastewater services we use. We're actually paying for growth on our water and wastewater bills. And I think the average citizen does not realize that. And I think going forward with Bill 23, I think it would be to our benefit and also to council's benefit to break that out and say, here's actually what is your user fee for what you're using, and here's the extraordinary extra amount you are now paying, or what you pay to growth according to Bill 23. So again, you know, I've done so in the past. I'd just really like to see more transparency around that. I think growth costs get buried in the water and wastewater user fees in a way that the average citizen doesn't understand. Just to pick up from John around Wellington Park, sadly, our parkland dedication bylaw went for almost 30 years without being updated, and most of the downtown towers got built under the old bylaw. And some of the number crunching I did, we potentially missed out on more than $8 million of fees that the legislation would have allowed us to collect if we were getting the maximum allowed under the law. So I think we're going to find ourselves behind the eight ball, and I'm bracing to be told, sorry, folks, we can't afford that park anymore. And adding in that park, along with adding the density, was what won us the award for our downtown secondary plan. Following up on Ron, like I'm interested to hear that regulations probably won't click in for 6 months for Bill 23, but I think Ford has essentially put all of the budgets for all municipalities in the shredder. It's unbelievable. Like I delegated on a Edinburgh Road property. If that's declared affordable and the development fees are waived, what would have normally been $1 million public contribution to services for that building will now be $4.5 million because we'll be paying for everything that would have been covered by DC. So the impact is potentially astounding. And then the last thing I'm going to pitch for is I really want to see a vacancy tax as soon as possible. And I think given that we are going to be on the hook for so much in development fees, I think a vacancy tax needs to be looked at through the lens of not just what you get if someone leaves it vacant, plus the benefit of, like, even if we collect no money, that we've instantly created available housing within our city. But I think we need to look at the benefits of a vacancy tax. Like if we're paying millions of dollars just to create 100 houses in a subdivision, like that is going to be so publicly expensive now because of Bill 23. There, no condo, no apartment, no house should be sitting vacant in this city in the midst of a housing crisis. So I'd really like to see that come forward as quickly as possible. And
well, let's unpack the vacancy. The vacancy fee or the vacancy tax. That's just clarified. That is not something that's included in this budget at the present time. But I have heard that there are challenges, and I am at heart in support of something like that. But I also understand that there are some challenges with a vacancy tax or fee. Is there anyone who's presenting who might be able to expand a bit on that? Tara.
Yeah, so thanks, Susan, for all your comments there. So starting with the vacancy tax, we have it on our radar. We're watching what other municipalities are doing. There's only a few right now that have actually implemented it. It's very, I would say, administratively burdensome. I don't want to say burdensome, but there's a lot of administration that goes into it because of the reports and how we'd have to tackle that. So we're watching it to see how it's working and what level of revenue and how the goals of that tax, are they actually achieving what the intent is in terms of reducing vacancy and getting more units out there, right? So we're watching, and we're not saying no to it, absolutely, but we're just trying to take a little bit of a slower approach because we don't have that type of capacity in our team. And so we're trying to be smart about it. The other thing on the property tax side is we're implementing a new property tax billing system right now. Ours is like very old, 20 years old maybe. And so it really limits the ability for us to do these types of special billings. Once we've just actually launched in the background. And so once we get that system up and running, the opportunity to do these types of things becomes a little bit easier. So we need a little bit of runway, but that type of thinking is definitely on our radar, and we're monitoring the sector. In terms of the comments about growth, and I'm going to go specifically to the storm or the utility water, wastewater storm, the comment about the growth and how we separate that out. That's also been on our radar. We've separated all on the tax side in terms of infrastructure, renewal, growth, and city building. We'd absolutely want to get to the same structure on our user rate side. And so that is something that we're working towards. And just like tax, we have assessment, kind of that user growth. And so there is a growth revenue aspect of the user rates as well that we do factor into the model. But again, acknowledge that that doesn't maybe come across as transparently or clear as maybe we could do. So appreciate the feedback. And I think, everything else that Susan had mentioned there, we don't really disagree. The impacts could be, very significant in terms of Bill 23 and the regs and the exemptions on these units. We have obviously the same concern, and it will be it's going to be expensive for us. And the parkland. The only thing I would say is while it took us a long time to update that bylaw, we did get it updated. It didn't get appealed. We are able to collect the fees now at this point in time. Others around the province have not been in that same situation, and they're still within appeal. And so I feel like we've done the best that we can right now, and we'll wait to see how it impacts us with Bill 23. So.
Thanks, Tara. Just a comment on the vacancy fee, because I saw a number of comments flying through the chat. I noticed Susan pointed out that British Columbia has a vacancy fee, and I do question whether economies of scale do play a significant role in what the cost recovery can be. The other concern that I have, and like I said, I'm in favor of a vacancy fee. Should a province take it over, I would be concerned that any surplus revenue from such a fee would flow to the province rather than the municipality. It still accomplishes one thing that is very important, and that is to penalize speculation, but there would not be the funds being returned to the municipality, given what I know about the history of downloading and fees that has occurred in this province. And I'll take the political heat for that one, rather than the staff. Bill Munkle has a question. Bill.
Does council actually get an accounting of the individual capital projects that had reported for the or approved for the previous year as to the actual expenditure on them in a given year versus the budgeted amount? Does that information actually go to council?
And I see that they were passing the buck on that one. Tara, who did you?
Well, I was asking, I don't want to hog all the airtime. So I was just asking if anybody else wanted to take it. So so every quarter we have budget monitoring reports. So we report quarterly on both the operating capital budget. We don't do it at a detailed, like every single project level, just because of the vast number of projects, but we roll it up. We talk about the any overages. We talk about the outcomes that we've achieved through that period, and what's ongoing. What are the key project highlights and activities that are ongoing for each quarter?
Thank you, and Morgan. I think you said John Fisher's had his hand up for a while. John, I guess you're next.
Just to pick up on the vacancy tax thing, it's not just about revenue. I think a vacancy tax downtown would be very significant to reinvigorating properties downtown and the whole thing there. So even if it does cost a little bit of money to administer, I think it would be well worth doing. That wasn't my initial question. So Trevor, unfortunately you got frozen when you were answering my question. I don't feel like I got answered. I wasn't really asking for a defense of GHJR and what it contributes to the city. I was just asking for the plans to incorporate the budgeting process in with the city's budgeting process. Are there any plans to do that? Because they are inextricably linked.
So, and yes, I did get frozen, and I apologize if I wasn't clear to your question with an answer. Guelph Junction Railway and the associated other municipal corporation that the City of Guelph has, being Guelph Municipal Holdings, Inc., are both budgeted on a multi-year budgeting cycling the same way that the city is. So that, as you've identified, there is linkage between how we factor in the relationships between the city and its municipal corporation. So they are both run on a multi-year budgeting model as well. So for GJR and for GMHI, both of those two municipal corporations are completing the second of their first phased in multi-year budget.
Okay, thanks. Morgan or Tanya, do you have any other questions at this point? I've got a couple that I could ask that I think are important. Morgan?
Yeah, a couple of quick fire questions. One thing that I wanted to bring up earlier, since new council, CAO Scott Stewart stated the dollar figure that the taxpayers of Guelph have been on the hook for all of the legislative changes that provincial government has brought down and what it has cost us in staff time redoing stuff. This is an impact to the budget. Does anybody happen to have that number at their fingertips? Because I know it was in the millions. And if you don't have it, that's okay.
Sure. So I think the number you might be referring to, is that from the November 22nd meeting, Morgan? Yeah. So I please don't quote me on this because I don't have it in front of me, but I think that was referring to the cost of like the municipal comprehensive review and other master plans that we're going to have to redo some of those fiscal impacts. So that, I think that number was about 3.8 million that Scott mentioned in that
number
meeting.
That's the number that I remember in my head as well. So thank you for that confirmation. So, you know, that when we're looking at budget, 3.8 million may sound like a little bit of money, but when you look at how much goes into staffing already, like the government's saying that they're trying to save us money and they're costing us money every single time that you guys have to go back and redo a great plan that you've already done. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. There was a quick question. Can you please give us a definition of what revenue paid in lieu of taxes is, please?
I can start. So it's universities and hospitals, that sort of thing. They pay an amount based on the number. They call it heads in beds. So I'm happy to have my colleagues build on that. But that's what it is. Instead of paying the regular property tax rates, they pay based on a different formula.
And I'll just jump in and add to that if you had if you'd watched last night, and some of you I'm sure did, Councillor Caron raised that as an addressed question as to the timing of how long it's been since the, and I'll borrow the term that Shannon used, the heads and beds tax has been in place, the payment in lieu. It goes back to in the 80s since that particular rate has been adjusted. There's been several lobbies brought forward by the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, as well as other forms of consideration to bring this to a topic. But unfortunately, it still remains in place and there's been no adjustments to it. And at this point, our advocacy strategy through our strategic Intergovernmental Affairs area is going to be readdressing that in the new year, and we'll be having some communication coming to council on it. But at this point, we have to go on the basis of the legislation that we're aware of.
Awesome. And
thank you.
One other quick thing that came up was with the delegated authority to prioritize the capital projects that came in earlier this year. How is that something that has been super beneficial that you guys see as something that you may have, you know, a good reason to sort of keep that moving forward, or is that over and done with now?
So thank you for the question. The delegative authority that was given to council, given to staff mid this year, was really helpful for us to strategize on the remainder of the 22 to into the 2023 year. And we have a responsibility to transparently report back to council all of the usage of that delegated authority. And I can tell you that there is an information report that is forthcoming to council on the status of our Q3 financial operating results, both operating and capital, I should say. And within it, we do make commentary as to the use of that delegated authority and the transitions or shifts that we've made to respond to capital projects to keep them progressing and moving towards completion states. And we are going to be sharing again in the 2023 budget deliberation modelings empirical evidence of what that delegated authority has provided as far as I think the ability to move things faster than seeking council approvals for adjustments on a line by line basis. We can make those adjustments within the delegation and within the parameters that were identified and move programs of work forward. So it's been helpful, and we'll certainly be interested in having a conversation with council on that going forward.
Awesome. And then just finally, sort of a recap of the way that multi-year budget flows in conjunction with new council. So new councils just come in, we're in year one, they are set to approve the budget that was approved by, or that was set by the previous council. And then in year two, the new council will be setting the multi-year budget for 4 years, which will start the whole process again. So when in 2026, we have a new council, their first act will be approving the final year of the 4-year budget that was set by the current term. Is that correct?
So I'll take a stab at that and just give you a sense of the alignments, because I think that I'll hit the criticism. The criticism could be, I've just been elected and I'm into my first term of my 4-year term as a city councilor. And the first year that I'm going to be in my role is a budget that's been preset by the previous council. But there's value in this, and I want to accentuate the value. It's not necessarily limiting the powers of those councilors. It's actually giving this as the stage. That new council, as it forms, can divert its attention wholly on developing and refreshing its strategic objectives for its term of council. And from that strategic planning process, and in lots of times strategic plans, people on screen and others may say, it has great value, and others may say it's an impediment to moving business forward. But we very much feel it's definitely the what of what council is trying to achieve. Question was raised last night about a living wage conversation and what kind of a municipal body does the city of Guelph wish to be in that particular context. That is great context for the strategic planning sessions to consider what is the city of Guelph focused on. So the strategic plan is council's first primary body of work. It's not encumbered with trying to pass a very significant budget. And if you were to think about council forming to fresh start a 2023 budget with the current legislative changes that are in place, it would be a big distraction and detraction from their abilities to set their priorities for the term of council. So as this council takes its positioning, it is forming its strategic plan for 24 to 27, and then that will inform all of the multi-year budgeting work that staff are currently working on and in the background, waiting for the strategic principles to be determined. And we'll be bringing that to council and to the public in the fall of 2023, which then allows them to impact the years 24 to 27. And Morgan, as you identified, giving that next term of council the ability in its first year to reconsider its strategic priorities that set the course for council going forward.
And I got to jump in there, Trevor. Thank you very much for that explanation. I thought that Councillor Busuttil raised a good question on how the strategic plan can be modified, reviewed, perhaps even thrown out. I think it was a very good question. But I think what is equally important from my point of view, and I'm very happy with this, is the establishment of the strategic plan provides us with the foundation policies and principles that drive the budget. And what struck me when I came on council was that council, for the most part, was driving strategic plan with the budget. In other words, we flipped it around and we did things line by line. So a question came up last night about, what if I want to change snow plowing? Those particular line by line items fit into a strategic plan that I think more than anything else must be appreciated as being the foundational principles that are driving the city in the future that are subject to review by a new council. And I think that's very important. But the budget principles themselves stay with the strategic plan, regardless what the manifestation might be from one council to another. And if I'm wrong, I'm certainly looking for anybody to correct me on that. I guess I'm not wrong. That's good for a change, which means I'm going to shift to Bill Mungall again, because Bill, I'm just going to read your question just for sake of time. Early in his first term, the mayor stated that he would bring in the Citizens Budget Advisory Committee. Has the city administration any ability to support this if it is re-raised? If anybody wants to comment on that one, I would love it.
Well, I think this, thank you for the question. I think the simple answer is it I don't know what the mayor comments were, and I'm not challenging the accuracy of the reference. I just can tell you that right now the advancement of where the city is at in its multi-year budgeting strategy, its reliance on and inter workings with city staff and administration. At this point, there is no mention of a citizen budget advisory committee that's being injected into our multi-year budgeting or even our 2023 confirmation budgeting process.
Thank you. Okay, just one quick question, then I'll go to Tanya, but it's an important one. How close are we to the 5.17% that was predicted last year? Are our assumptions relatively sound, or are we looking at some significant work ahead of us on this component of the multi-year budget?
So thank you, Councillor Ault. I'm going to take that answer, and I'm going to say that in some ways, I appreciate the intent, but as you likely will be expecting my answer to be, until we deliver the January 12th public release of the 2023 budget, I would not be in any appropriate space to give any anticipations of adjustments at this point. We owe that responsibility not only to the completion of our executive team's process, but also the engagements that we have with council and the delivery to council. So I say this with humor, nice try, but we're going to have to just wait.
I think it's because there has been rumblings that we have a minimum of 5.17% tax increase. And I've always believed that program drives taxes, not the other way around. I think what's really important from your answer is to appreciate that a budget is a dynamic process that is not set until it's set. And there are a number of different pieces that have to be entertained, including community input over the next month and a half.
And with bang that, on.
Sorry?
I said bang on.
Okay. And with that, speaking of bang on, we're going to go to our bang on host, Tanya, who has announcements that are of importance to everyone. I want to thank all of our guests and to encourage you to come for the live Breezy Breakfast. Is it next week? Have I got that right? Where we're going to share our book talks for the Christmas time. Tanya.
On December 4th. We had a Greenbelt rally in Guelph. As you can see, Mike Schreiner spoke, and our own councillor, Phil Ault, spoke as well. On Sunday, December the 18th, there will be a Greenbelt rally in Erin. Details will be coming soon. Have your say, the Ontario edition, the consultation deadline. 4, A Place to Grow and the Provincial Policy Statement integration, proposed integration, is on December 30th. Again, please Google AMO consultations, More Homes Faster Act, to get to that consultation. Have your say about the Allen's Dam Bridge. Take the dam short survey by December 18th. Water, wastewater, stormwater master plans. Do you have questions, comments? Please take the survey by December the 20th. And finally, have your say about single-use plastics. What's your take on fees for single-use bags and cups? And do you think there should be a minimum cost for reusable grocery bags? Please take the survey by January the 2nd. Oh, have your say about Guelph's seasonal patio program. Do you have any suggestions for the third year of this pilot project? Please give in your comments by January the 13th. And as Phil spoke about earlier, next week, we are going to be meeting in person at the Rise and Shine restaurant. It's BYO Books. What are you reading and why are you reading it? And why should we read what you're reading? Our special guest will be Steve Kraft, one of our favorite morning people, the CEO of the Guelph Public Library. And with that, I believe it's a wrap.
That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. You have just heard the final Breezy Breakfast podcast of 2022. Thanks to the Breezy team of Phil Out, Kevin Bowman, Morgan Danny, and Tanya Gaylord. Music is provided by Jules Sturm. I'm Jiayu, the producer of the podcast. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.